Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour. It's from True Romance Magazine called I Beat Up My Third Grade Class. Here is the story. In my old life, I wasn't a teacher. I'd been employed as a slammer. I was definitely small potatoes in the protection racket, but my boss was the Don, the biggest racketeer in our town. I loved being part of his entourage, part of his protection, and I loved my work. It was close enough to the power center of my poor neighborhood to give me some distinction. I protected the boss, and as long as no one messed with me, Sammy the slammer, I didn't mess with them. But I was powerless to protect my boss when the federal tax man came calling. Tax evasion, they claimed, flashing shiny silver badges and making sure we saw the guns holstered beneath their three-piece fancy suits. We all stood by helplessly while they cuffed the boss and escorted him out of the restaurant where we were eating dinner. Better get out of here fast, Tony, Two Man told me. He was called Two Man because of his skill of beating up two men at a time. Well over 6 feet and 250 pounds, Tony was a man to listen to. Tony hefted himself up, light on his feet, and hightailed it out the kitchen door of the restaurant. Through the window of the restaurant, I could see that more agents were getting ready to come in and arrest any small fish dumb enough to still be around. So I went out right behind Two Man. Where are you heading, Two Man? I followed him closely into the basement entrance of one of the small apartment buildings behind the restaurant. He gave me a look that meant shut up. Good luck to you, Sammy. You're on your own, he said, pausing only long enough to shake my hand. Then he stepped into the elevator and held out one big hand, the size of a hammock, to stop me from following him. I let the elevator door slide shut in my face. I knew there was no way I could force Tony Two Man to help me. He could easily knock me senseless with one big meaty hand tied behind his back. I might slam a guy or two, but I didn't stand a chance of holding my own against someone as big and experienced as the Two Man. I was too small to even dream about it, so I did the only thing I could think of. I got out of town, keeping the radio on in my car to check the news. My original plan was to hide out for a few months till it was safe to go back to work for the boss. But the news reports made it sound like the boss was heading to prison for a long, long time. He hadn't paid tax money he owed to the government. The announcers on the radio were saying they predicted a long, complicated trial with a prison sentence at the end. After a couple of hours, I felt safe enough to pull off the highway to get gas. I was in a puny-looking town, small enough that I was sure no one would bother looking for me. Besides, I was small news. Oh, I had slammed a guy or two for daring to come up to the table where the boss sat, but I wasn't the heavy protection or part of the brains. So I figured all I had to do was stay out of sight for a while and keep out of trouble. I made my way over to a motel that was clean, air-conditioned, and had cable television. It seemed like a good enough place to hide out while I decided what to do. I settled in, flipping the air conditioner up to high and turning on the television set. The boss arrest was the lead news story, even in this small town burb. I watched as a video of the outside of the restaurant flashed across the screen. No one was exactly dining anymore. Everyone had disappeared by now. It made me feel funny, almost lonely-like. I walked over to the window and looked out. Maybe I'll stay here for a while, I thought. And the next morning, I dressed in a pair of clean jeans and tried to scare up a job for myself. I hoped to get a bouncer job at a bar or a club, but all those jobs were filled. I visited each bar in town and found myself escorted out of every one of them by some seriously big dudes who wanted to keep those jobs for themselves. Chill out, dudes, I complained. The jobs listed in the local want ads were for chumps. Still, I thought a regular job was probably a safer idea. It wouldn't be smart to develop a reputation here that would get me noticed. I applied for a job to be a pizza delivery man. After all, pizza was one of my favorite foods, and I figured it wouldn't take me long to know every road in a town this small. Right away, I felt at home at Marky's Best Pizza Place. Guys like me hung out there, downing beers and ordering large pizzas with the works. And the girls weren't bad either. Look at that, babe. We'd elbow each other. Oh, look at that, babe. We'd elbow each other as the girls came in to order their pizzas. Full-figured and ripe, most of those girls were ready, willing, and able. It was a bachelor's paradise, unless some family came in to eat. Most of the families wandered in, took one look at us, gawking at the girls, and wandered right out again. But occasionally a family stayed. Then we had to watch our language and our manners, or old man Marky would give us the evil eye and threaten to fire us all. "Aren't those little kids cute?" The girls who hung out there would giggle, and all the guys would roll their eyes. Other than that, it was a good job working there, with the side benefit of all the leftover pizza I could eat. Old man Marky even began teaching me how to make his secret pizza dough recipe. But that was all before the girl of my dreams came into the pizza parlor. She was a fresh, cool babe compared to the other hot tamales that hung around there. "One small plain pizza to go," she ordered. Right away, I knew she lived alone and wasn't married or living with any guy. I knew that guys just don't eat small, plain pizzas. "Who is she?" I asked Polly, the cook. "Who, Lisa?" "She lives nearby, works for the school system, studying to be a teacher or something," Paul said. Lisa didn't even spare me a glance. It was like I was a piece of furniture or something. But as she left, I watched her body sway as she walked out the door. And that's when it hit me that I wanted the sort of job that would get Lisa to notice me. I thumbed through the want ads again. There didn't seem to be anything, but I wasn't discouraged. I wasn't in a rush. To win over a girl like Lisa would take time, and besides, I had all the time in the world. I looked in the paper the next day and the next, but it wasn't until the weekend that I saw it. There in black, headline-size letters, was an ad for substitute teachers for all age levels. No degree, it said. No special skills, nothing necessary except a love of children. That's it, I thought. Pay me money. Let me meet Lisa and I can love kids. I looked up the address of the Board of Education in town, and even though it made me nervous to go back to school, I drove over the next day. The job looked like a pretty good gig from the parking lot. There were a few Lexus parked outside, a bunch of BMWs, and even two Caddies. I'd put on polyester navy slacks, kind of like my high school science teacher had worn, a blue button-down shirt and black suede leather loafers. I refused to wear a tie like my old science teacher had, though as I sauntered into the main office, I noticed that all the other men were wearing ties. "Can I help you?" A short, chirpy-sounding woman in a flowered dress and a white cardigan sweater came up to the counter. Her bright blue eyes were friendly enough, and when I told her I was there for the substitute teaching job, her eyes looked even more friendly. "Oh, we're desperate for subs," she said. "Are you thinking of becoming a teacher?" "Yeah," I began, quickly changing it to a "yes, ma'am." When her eyebrows began to rise, it seemed like the right thing to say to get the job, and that's the story I told the assistant superintendent when he came out to interview me. They were so desperate for substitute teachers that it was unbelievably easy to lie my way through the interview. I told him I'd get my high school transcript sent over and that I had experience with kids since I'd always taken care of my younger brother and sister when my mom worked. What I didn't tell him was that I'd never even graduated high school and that I'd taken care of my younger brother and sister by slamming them in the head whenever they didn't do what I said fast enough. And I sure didn't tell him I was a junior enforcer before I'd come to this pretty little town. "You have to get fingerprinted before we hire you," Mrs. Chirpy Lady told me. That's when I knew I had the job. Since I'd never had the misfortune to be arrested, I knew I'd pass the fingerprint check. There'd been times I wished I had been arrested, wished to prove myself a man, but now I was glad. Well, it might have been fun to brag about how I'd survived a stint in the box. Not having done any time made it easy to get work. "When can you start?" Mrs. Chirpy asked me. "Whenever," I said. She looked happy. She'd explained something I needed to do as a substitute teacher and that they'd called me early on the mornings they needed me to work. I figured that I could take days off whenever I wanted to. I just wouldn't answer the phone, or like the drug ads used to tell us I could, just say no. Yeah, I could do that. I didn't feel so positive and happy when my phone rang at 6 a.m. the next morning. Still groggy, I imagined it was the boss needing me to run an errand for him. Then I thought it was the guy from the floral basket, but it was Mrs. Chirpy. Sounding as exultant as an early bird who's going to catch a worm. "Good morning," she sang into the phone. "Are you available to work this morning?" Yeah, I managed to say, though I really wanted to tell her something else. Luckily, I was too tired to let her know where to get off calling me so early. "We need you at the middle school, Mrs. Jones." Mrs. Jones, the Spanish teacher, is sick. "Oh, and don't worry, you don't have to speak Spanish. She just left a surprise quiz for you to give her classes. That should take the entire class time up. Be there by 7:30. It's amazing how, as a teacher, the thought of a quiz cheers you up. It's one of life's little quirks that what frightened me as a kid made me happy as an adult. She rattled off an address, which was on the bad side of town. I managed to scrawl it on the pad next to the phone and forced myself out of bed. Groaning, I showered and pulled on my teacher's suit. That's what I called my polyester pants and button-down shirt. And since I hadn't bought a tie, I didn't worry about it. I just poured down some coffee and drove over to Madigan Middle School. It looked deserted to me. The parking lot, though, was filled with little Volkswagen Bugs and Toyota Celicas. I parked my red, souped-up Babe Magnet car in a spot as far away from the other cars as possible and headed inside. When I finally figured out that only the front door was open, I went inside with a few students who were being dropped off early by parents who obviously were heading out to work. I followed the kids to the main office and introduced myself. "I'm here to substitute for the Spanish teacher," I explained to the school secretary. Just looking at her made me remember all those trips I'd made to school offices to visit the principal, and I could feel myself start to sweat. But she didn't even blink. "Oh, okay, here's your ID badge, a school schedule and a map of the school and lesson plans for today." I clutched the map and clipped on the ID badge and managed to find my way to the classroom. The bulletin boards were decorated with posters of bullfights and pictures of Spain. It was clean and neat and right near the girls' bathroom. I rightly guessed that's where most of the girls in the classes would be asking to go. By 8 o'clock, kids began steadily straggling in and bells began dinging. "Hi, you must be the sub. I'm Lisa, the aide." I couldn't believe my eyes. Like a miracle, in walked Lisa. It was entranced by everything about, oh, I was entranced by everything about her. She had beautiful straight white teeth that had obviously been helped by an orthodontist, and her long blonde hair was tied back in a neat ponytail. Her eyes were a striking green color behind a pair of red wire rim granny glasses, and her smile reminded me of all the nice pretty girls who wouldn't date me while I was in school. "I'm working as a teacher's aide while I'm saving up money for college. I want to be a teacher someday," she told me. "Me too." I was gratified to see her expression brighten as she looked at me with interest. "I just love kids," I told her, feeling my chest puff out as her eyes filled with warmth. "And yes, respect. I couldn't help myself. I really wanted this chick to like me." "You want to teach today's class, or you want me to do it?" she asked, smiling at me like I was the big winner of one of the numbers games my boss ran. I could tell she was dying to teach the class. I tried to act cool. "Why don't you do it? I'm not familiar with the kids and the routines yet." Then I sat down behind the teacher's desk and watched Lisa take over the class. It was obvious the kids knew her, and even though she was young and a hot-looking babe at that, they listened to her. "Quiet," she commanded, and they quieted down right away for her. She handed out the test, and the kids went to work without a moan or a groan or even a whimper of complaint. Then, instead of sitting down next to me and talking the way I had hoped, she walked around the room, circling and answering any questions the kids had about the test. Man, school had certainly changed since I had dropped out. Lisa was there with me the entire day. She kept classes quiet, gave them their exams, and took care of everything that needed to be done, including taking attendance. Apparently, taking attendance was vital. "It's needed for state records," Lisa told me. When the last bell rang, the halls looked like the Exodus from Armageddon. The kids were noisy, pushing and shoving their way out of the school. Lisa grabbed me and walked with me to the main office, holding the test papers and the attendance book. "Here, slide these into the teacher's mailbox," she told me, ready to leave, but I wasn't going to let her go so easy. "Hey, want to go for a drink or something to celebrate my first day? I don't drink, but how about a cup of coffee?" "Great, I'll drive." Together, we walked out into the afternoon, and I steered her over to my babe magnet car, expecting her to admire it. Disappointed, I found out that to Lisa, cars weren't important. She told me how to get to a nearby coffee shop. "It's nice and quiet there," she promised. I took her arm as we walked inside and sniffed appreciatively at her perfume. It was light and sweet, unlike the heavy scent most of the women I went out with wore. I'd never dated anyone like Lisa, and I really, really wanted to impress her. As I stood there inhaling the scent of her perfume, I knew I was in big trouble. Just like that, wham, I fell in love. Needless to say, when Mrs. Chirpy called me the next morning and told me that she needed me to sub again, I was ready. "This time, it's at the elementary school," she said. Oh, I was disappointed. I just assumed I'd be back at the middle school. Because I'd wanted to seem cool, I hadn't asked Lisa for her phone number. It was partly because I was afraid she wouldn't give it to me, and also because I didn't want to look too eager. Only today, I was assigned the elementary school's third grade. I figured it had to be easy, but I found out differently. The kids were a group of pint-sized 8-year-olds that never stopped moving around or talking. The teacher had left me lesson plans. I was supposed to teach math, reading, social studies, and blah, blah, blah. I figured the kids were as interested in this stuff as I was, so basically I just let them do what they wanted all day. It got a little noisy with a few minor disagreements, but the kids seemed to be having a good enough time. All I did was take attendance and think about how much easier it was in the middle school when Lisa did everything else. This time, when the final bell rang, I knew enough to shove my way out ahead of the mob of kids and hand in my attendance sheet at the office. That weekend, I rented an apartment near the pizza place. I was hoping that way I might just casually run into Lisa while she was shopping or buying a pizza. And in the meantime, I decided to continue subbing as long as possible. So, whenever Mrs. Chirpy called, I always said yes, hoping to hear that they needed me in the middle school. But it was the elementary school that mostly seemed to need substitute teachers. It didn't seem to matter that I'd always ignored the lesson plans the teachers left for me. By just letting the kids play, things were easier and seemed to be working out okay. But as the weather got warmer and it got closer to the end of the school year, the kids got wilder and wilder. For example, there was the time the fifth graders all said yes to every name as I called out the attendance list. If I hadn't caught one little blonde-haired brat saying yes to Robert McCloskey's name, I might never have known. I tried it again and again, and every time some girl giggled and yelled yes to Robert's name. I could have killed them, but I figured it wasn't worth murder one. Then there were the first graders climbing all over, standing on desks, singing and tap dancing. No matter what I said, no one paid any attention to me until I threatened to wallop one of them. "Teachers can't hit," a little boy sang out, dancing out of my reach. "Try me," I snarled. I must have looked as angry as I felt because they settled down enough so that if the principal walked by, he wouldn't notice anything amiss. Finally, the middle school called me again. I practically did cartwheels as I said I'd be able to sub that day. I drove over to the middle school hoping I'd get to sit alone with Lisa during lunch, hoping she'd give me her phone number. "How's teaching going?" Lisa beamed when I saw her in the teacher's lounge. I wanted to say, "Who cares?" But I knew better. Lisa had told me all about how much she loved teaching and how much she wanted to get her teaching degree. "Who are you today?" Lisa asked. I must have looked puzzled because she added, "What teacher are you subbing for?" "Math," I told her. "Ugh, that's a bummer. The kids don't like math," Lisa told me, as if I didn't know it. I couldn't blame the kids. I didn't like math either. That's why when I told them they had a free day, they cheered and left me alone. The only thing I made sure to do was that darn attendance. The math teacher was out all week, and I was more than happy to be her sub. I'd gotten Lisa's phone number, and we went out for coffee every day after school was over. On Wednesday, I brought her some flowers I'd gotten from the flower basket and asked her out for Saturday night. Just as I'd hoped, the flowers did the trick, and she said yes. This job was working out. It wasn't until Friday that the boom began to fall. Lisa stopped me in the hall outside the office. She looked around nervously. "Some of the parents are phoning the principal. They say you haven't taught their children anything all week, that you're not a good sub." I was furious. Hadn't I broken up every fight that had begun in the class? Hadn't I put up with tacks the kids put on the chair and the glue they smeared on the desk? Hadn't I let them do whatever they wanted for an entire week? And now the little ingrates were tattling to their parents on me? I wanted to punch someone in the nose, but that someone wasn't Lisa. "Those spoiled little brats," was what I said. I knew Lisa would be shocked if she really knew what I was thinking. "It's easy to teach math," Lisa said soothingly. "Just put some problems on the board and explain how you figure out the answer. You know, step by step." I looked at her and nodded. I knew it wouldn't be a good thing to tell her I'd dropped out of school before I'd learned enough math to teach any of it. The only math I'd needed to know back then was that my two fists against someone's head equaled me winning the fight. "I'll help you," she offered. "Just bring the math book and the lesson plans the teacher left you to the coffee room this afternoon." "Yeah, yeah," I told her. "Look, this is my last day teaching math, so don't sweat it. I'll do better next time." We had our coffee, but Lisa was pretty quiet. I knew she wanted me to love teaching the same way she did, but I didn't. I remember mentioning that maybe I should get another job. She looked shocked and hurt. "Give up teaching?" she exclaimed. "Oh, no, you shouldn't give up your dreams." "Yeah, yeah," I mumbled, regretting I'd ever told her. I dreamt of being a teacher, too. But that afternoon, she leaned over and kissed my cheek when we got back to the parking lot. "See you Saturday night, Teach," she said softly. And for the first time since I was 10 years old, I didn't want to wash away a kiss. Saturday night was a blast. I was pretty careful not to offer to take Lisa up to my apartment for some hot and spicy sex games, and so instead we went to a restaurant in town Lisa had chosen. She didn't drink at all, and I tried to stick to only two drinks, which made it really inexpensive. Lisa talked, and I listened. I love the way her voice sounded. It was so soft and serious. Her eyes shone when she talked about teaching and the kids. She made them sound so angelic that I almost forgot what the little brats were really like. Mrs. Chirpy didn't call me the next week at all. I didn't mind. I spent the week sleeping late and ordering a new bed for my bedroom, hoping I'd soon persuade Lisa to let me make love to her. I made sure to order it king-sized. I also began to scan the want ads again. I was feeling pretty confident. No police seemed to be chasing me, and no mention of me was made in the news. Things were looking up. And when Mrs. Chirpy called the following Monday, I was all set to turn her down until she said, "We need a sub for the middle school." "Why the hell not?" I said, thinking of Lisa, and that's how I ended up subbing for the English teacher. "Jesus, English will be even more boring than math was," I muttered as I pulled on a teacher outfit. I'd found black polyester pants, the same as the navy ones, and I'd bought a white button-down shirt as well. When I looked in the mirror, I shuddered. Good thing the boys from town can't see me now. I thought I'd never get any respect. When I walked into the classroom, I could tell it was going to be a bad day. The first class was wild. Two girls were running around the room in circles, chasing each other and knocking papers off the desk and books off the shelves as they ran by. They raced by my desk and the attendance sheet went flying, landing on the floor. "Hey, look what I got," a red-headed kid yelled, picking it up. "Give me that," I growled. But he slid it behind his back and another kid took it and ran away. I stepped forward to grab it, but the kids were passing the paper around from one to another, yelling, "Hot potato, hot potato." As it passed near my desk, I reached out and grabbed it from some kid who'd been stupid enough to stand close to me. "Sit down," I commanded, but no one listened to me. The entire morning continued like that, but I told myself I didn't care. It was like it was when I was younger and in school. No one listened to me then either. As for the class attendance, I didn't bother trying to find out who was there and who wasn't. I just checked off each class as entirely present. I figured if it was wrong, no one would notice until it was too late. By the time I went for lunch, I had the worst headache I'd ever had. The yelling and screaming of the kids had morphed into cursing, shouting, and fighting. "These kids, they don't respect anyone. It's like a free-for-all with them. They need a good whack to put them in their place," I complained to Lisa. I could almost feel my hands tingle from wanting to slam some of them. Lisa didn't look upset. "As they get to know you, they respect you more and more." "Well, they're not respecting me, and they're getting on my nerves, that's for sure." I picked up my tray and hers and headed for the door. "I hope I can control myself." Lisa laughed, but I wasn't kidding when I said that. All morning long, I'd been battling the urge to spank these kids. My growls and snarls didn't seem to intimidate them. Only getting up and making a threatening move stopped them from all-out madness. I strode back into my classroom, my head throbbing, my temper short. The kids started filing in, heading to sit with friends rather than in their assigned seats. I didn't really care if only they would just sit down and shut up. I stood up. "This class is beginning now," I told the class, "and anyone who mouths off will be in trouble. Settle down and do your homework or read your assigned reading. Got that?" "Drop dead, teach," one of the kids sitting in the back row said. while another began a slow, steady stream of curse words. "Get your work out now," I ordered in the same voice that used to make those people who held back payments to the boss pay right away. Not one kid even blinked. "Read the stinking books yourself, Dumbo," a girl said from the side. I looked quickly to see who said it, but I couldn't tell, and as I faced the side, books and papers began to fly. It was like the kids went nuts. I had to duck to avoid being hit by someone's heavy science book, and then a dictionary came flying at me, then a math book and a social studies textbook. "I'm warning you," I shouted, but it didn't mean a thing. I don't think the kids could even hear me over all their catcalls and yelling. Book bags began to get tossed in my general direction until I felt in danger of being crushed to death by a school bag. At least that's what I said later. What really happened is that those kids tripped me over the edge. I simply flipped out, and to be honest, those kids deserved everything they got and more. It was as though Sam, the slammer, came out of hiding and took over my body. It was easy. I simply grabbed the kid in the middle of the room who had thrown the first school bag and smacked him hard alongside his head, the way my uncle used to smack me when I disobeyed him. And then I found the kid who was cussing and spitting and snatched him out of his seat and smacked him too, a little harder than the first kid. He slumped down in his seat, holding his head and crying. I didn't care as long as he cried quietly. By the time I made my way back to the back row where the worst offenders were sitting, I'd managed to hit most of the class and shut them up. "Behave or die," I shouted, grabbing a boy who questioned the legitimacy of my birth and throwing him up against the back wall. He bounced off like a rubber ball and slid down to the floor, a dazed expression on his face. I turned and faced the class. "Anyone else who can't sit still and be quiet gets the same," I threatened loudly. The kids were finally quiet. All I could hear were quiet sobs and sniffling. I didn't even notice that some of the kids were missing. I just knew the silence in the room was heavenly. Finally, I was getting the respect I deserved. I was marching back towards my desk when the door opened and in walked the principal. I was thinking he would give me the Purple Medal of Honor, but the horrified look on his face made me revise that idea. He turned towards the kid I'd smacked on the side of the head. I have to admit, the red welt that was developing there didn't look good. "Who hit you?" the principal demanded. In that no-nonsense, don't you dare lie to me now voice that all principals must take special classes to learn. The kid slid down in his seat. I gave him a threatening look, hoping he'd keep his mouth shut, but instead the kid pointed a shaky finger at me. "And what about you?" the principal asked the boy I'd flung into the wall. He was still on the floor. I hoped he'd be too dazed to say anything, but once again I was wrong. "Teacher did it," he said, beginning to bawl, and soon all 27 kids were bawling like babies. Before I knew what was happening, the two biggest and brawniest of the school security guards were on either side of me. "Hey, I didn't do anything wrong," I blustered, sounding just like I did when I was a student. And now, just as back then, my words didn't count for much. They each grabbed an arm, and together they practically lifted me off my feet and dragged me out of the classroom as the sobs of the kids changed to hoots or loud laughter. The last thing I heard as they hauled me out of the room was the principal demanding silence. The two security guards forced me down the hall and into the principal's office, where the secretary was calling the cops to come get me. Her calling the cops really made me sweat, but I figured I'd be okay because here in this town, no one had ever heard of Sam the Slammer. I remember thinking that the worst I'd get was some jail time. And in that sense, I was right, only I didn't realize how bad jail really was, and I surely didn't realize the magnitude of what I'd done and the changes that would be brought against, or the charges that would be brought against me. The cell they put me in was small and smelled bad. I balanced on the edge of the bed's thin, dirty mattress, wondering what the hell I was going to happen to me. What was going to happen to me now? And God help me, I thought Lisa would be coming to bawl me out soon. I'd even begun thinking about our escape. The two of us running off to the Bahamas or something. I'd never been in jail before, so I didn't know what to expect when two cops came to get me. They told me to turn around and slipped cuffs onto my wrists. They were too tight, and I could feel my circulation being cut off. "Hey, can you loosen these?" I asked. They yanked me down the hallway and through gray metal doorways. "Too tight, tough man?" one of them taunted, shoving me into position for mug shots. I squirmed, trying to get away, but the other cop grabbed my arms, forcing them up till I sat quietly while my mug shot was snapped. They fingerprinted me one hand at a time while my other hand was cuffed tightly to a chair that was bolted to the floor. When I tried to resist, they just laughed. Wanna fight, tough man? The cop asked, laughing at my one-handed efforts to protect myself. I'll be glad to. I'm not some little school kid you can bully. They pushed me down the hall into the interrogation room. That's when I began to sweat big time. I want a lawyer, I said. But they ignored me until they had me safely cuffed down. We've got 27 witnesses that say you assaulted school children left in your care. Sure, call a lawyer. Who do you want? I don't know anyone in town, I said. Wait, I told them. I told them Lisa's phone number, and they dialed the phone for me, holding the phone up to my ear. My hands were cuffed behind me, and I had to tip my head to the side, cradling the phone between my head and my shoulder while it rang. Hello? Lisa's soft voice answered. Lisa, it's Sam. You've got to help, you brute, she cried out. To hit defenseless little kids like that and threaten them? To think I actually thought you were the guy I might want to marry. Get lost, Sam. You hear me? Get lost. She was yelling so loud the cops could clearly hear her, and they laughed before hanging up the phone. The little woman annoyed? The cop with the big mouth asked. Maybe not so fond of you anymore. Wait till the guys in prison get a hold of you. Prison? Yeah. They're not so fond of child molesters in prison. A lot of the guys have kids, and they like the idea of their kids being beaten by teachers, especially big mouth punk teachers with attitude problems. Well, they said they don't, they like the idea, but maybe they meant to say they don't like the idea. Okay. He snickered. Come on, time for some questions and answers. Think of it like kind of a test. I tried to explain just how bad the kids had been, but the cops didn't care. I knew my goose was cooked solid. After I'd answered all their dumb questions over and over again, they took me back to my cell and stuffed me in there to wait. You'll have a hearing. then probably get a public defender, the one cop told me, while the other grumbled about it being a waste of his tax money. Plead guilty, give it a rest, little man, he taunted. Think anyone cares that the kids were bad? No chance, man. He was right. The judge wouldn't care. Any judge would sentence me to jail in a minute. If I knew my judges, they all had plenty of kids and grandkids. When the court-appointed lawyer showed up, I had to agree with him that a plea bargain was probably the best thing. Because so many children were involved, you'll probably be looking at some prison time, but not too much, he told me. We should have some bargaining room with the DA. In the end, I was able to plead down, but was still sentenced to 15 months in prison, with time off for the month I'd spent in jail. For all my big talk and swaggering around, I'd never done any prison time. The building was a threatening gray stone and concrete facility filled with guys doing time for all kinds of heinous crimes. As usual, I was small potatoes compared to most of them. I had no friends in prison, no Tony Two Man to back me up. No one even believed I'd ever worked for the boss. The other cons picked on me whenever I left my cell. No one respects a man who hurts kids, even though most of those guys were beat up. The guys here beat up their own kids and old ladies pretty bad. Hey, tough man, want to try to slam me? The big dudes ask. Everyone laughs. I just stand there because there's no way I would ever win against one of these guys. But being in prison has given me plenty of time to think things over. I miss Lisa more than anything else. I know I blew it with her. She'll never give me a second chance. And she's right. A two-bit jerk like me will never amount to anything. Still, there are nights I think about her so much I can almost smell her scent in the room. But when I open my eyes and look around, I'm still in prison, entombed in the same small, smelly cell I'll be occupying for the near future. I've lost all chances with Lisa. I know she'll never look at me or talk with me again. Her smile is lost to me now, and is the chance for a better future, some children together, a normal kind of life. I'm a loser, one that can never offer her the future she deserves. The one thing I've done in prison is sign up for GED classes. They offer classes in math, writing, science, reading, and history. I signed up for all five. The classes are tough for me. I haven't been in school since I was a teenager, and it's especially hard to concentrate in here. I can spend some time in the library, but even there's lots of noise and no privacy. Still, I'm doing okay, and the teacher says I can take the test soon enough. I really hope I pass. After that, the teacher says there are some correspondence college classes I might be eligible for. I just smile and nod and think, no way, me in a college class? What a joke. Still, she reminds me of Lisa, all soft and pleasant, but she makes me feel like I can do stuff, learn stuff. And when I think that way, I do learn. She keeps us all in line, too. No goofing off when Teach is in the room. With just a word or a look, she manages us cons. Man, I'd like to have had her secret when I was subbing. I've never had a teacher like her. My old school teachers were tough and mean. They never made a dumb guy like me feel smart. I used to think that was the way to handle kids, but now I'm not too sure of that. Before I take my test, she's having me meet with a counselor. You've got to set goals for your life, Sam, she tells me. goals you can achieve. I shrug, wondering what she's talking about. I've never achieved anything, I say. I don't know from any goals. You're trying to get your GED. That's your goal right now. But you have to think ahead. What are you going to do when you get your GED? She asks. I'll worry about that when I get my GED, I reply. And she looks annoyed. College, Sam. Think college. But I'm not thinking college. I'm thinking technical classes. Classes that can help me get a decent job when I get out. I review my math page one more time. When I get my GED, maybe I could learn computer repair or appliance maintenance. Maybe someone would hire me, give me a chance. My life right now stinks big time. I know I don't stand a chance of being hired in some decent job. I'll probably always be the bottom of the barrel type of guy. It's hard not to get depressed, not to give up. I fantasize that Lisa will be willing to see me when I get out. I pretend during the long dark nights that maybe she'll give me a second chance. But the reality is that she won't. So the best I can do is hope to build myself a better life one step at a time. I see now that being a slammer to the boss didn't give me any kind of a decent future, and pretending to be what I wasn't didn't work either. But maybe, just maybe, I can be something decent one day. I've learned that it's not necessary to be a doctor or a lawyer or even a teacher. I just want to learn a trade, earn a decent living, and have all those things I'd never had in my life. Maybe one day I'll even have a family, and I pray that any kids I have will have better teachers than me. I pray that they'll have teachers like Lisa and that they'll be smart enough to appreciate it. But right now, I can only take it one day, one step at a time, and I can only hope that with time and patience, I'll have the chance to live a decent life. Okay, well, that's the end of that story. Kind of interesting there. I hope you enjoyed it, okay? This has been The Romance Show with volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. Have a wonderful, wonderful week, and take care, and I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.